Hello, podcast listeners. This is Adam from Hotspur Enterprises Media Productions. Again, I just wanted to thank everybody for listening to Let's Talk Art with Brooke and making the podcast a success. I also want to remind you about Reptiles on Caffeine. If you've enjoyed listening to Brooke on these podcasts, you'll definitely want to check out this other project of hers. It's an insightful and humorous look at the way we all deal with the stresses of everyday life. Simply Google Reptiles on Caffeine and the listing for the book should be at the top of the page. You'll not only be buying a great book, but you'll also be helping to support this podcast's continued success. And now on to Let's Talk Art with Brooke.
Hi, podcasters. This is Brooke with Let's Talk Art. Today I'm talking art with Maggie Adler of the Amon Carter Museum of American Art in Fort Worth, Texas. We're talking about their Identity exhibition, which goes on until October 9th. So tell me about this Identity exhibition.
From two key acquisitions that my colleague Shirley Reese Hughes and I made for the permanent collection at the Amon Carter. And they were acquisitions exploring a new interest for us in expanding the timeline of the works on paper that we collect to include works of art by living artists that would lend some resonance to the interpretation of our historical collection.
Okay.
So those two works were actually two series of prints, one by Cedric Huckabee called The 99%, and then one by Glenn Ligon, his now iconic series called Runaways.
Right.
And I was responsible for the Runaways acquisition, and what compelled me about it is that, so basically, Ligon asked 10 of his friends to describe him as though they were filling out a missing persons report.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have 10 separate pieces of paper with images that one thinks is going to provide all the information that we need to know to understand Ligon better.
Right. Right.
And the more, and the revelation is, the more information we have, the less we really know.
Exactly.
And so I kind of was interested in looking at portraiture from our collection using Ligon and Huckabee in combination with portraiture from our collection to sort of get at what we can and cannot ascertain from written and visual evidence about people.
Right.
And so that's really the rationale for the show. And it just, the Huckabee works are really about the individuals who make up the identity of a community. So we've really separated the exhibition into three sections: individual identity as represented by the Ligons, community identity as represented by the 101, I believe it is, portraits of Huckabee's community members, and then celebrity identity, which we would contend those are the people who are the least understandable from imagery and writing, because their identity is constructed by so many sources, including now the public, but including the artists and the photographers who seek to represent them. So we have Marilyn Monroe in that section, in three different guises, and you really can know very little about who she was as a person behind the mask of her celebrity.
Yeah, because she was a very interesting person that no one really knows about, except for, you know, the pictures.
Well, and what we did is that we also included, I'm mostly a 19th century scholar, and so we also included a photograph of Sarah Bernhardt and Lily Langtry, and I'm trying to get people to understand that this construction of public identity as a celebrity did not start with Marilyn Monroe's generation, but was even present in the way people represented themselves in the 19th century.
Right, right. I think that's awesome, and I just think it's so cool. I mean, I was just identity, just the concept is just so huge, and just so, I mean, it could mean like so many different things. I mean, and just I'm just so interested in that, and that's part of what drew me to this exhibition.
I think the idea idea was we're not going to tackle the entirety of the subject. I mean, and we could probably do the show again 6 months from now with an entirely different set of objects.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
But this was a way of celebrating two really fundamental and kind of grand-changing works in my collection, and to show people you can acquisition draws works that maybe haven't even been seen before into a new light and a new context. Interestingly, the Eamon Carter started out as one person's vision, Eamon Carter himself.
Right.
And then Ruth Carter Stevenson took over where he left off. And I think when you work for a collection that is shaped by a very involved benefactor, mm-hmm. You tend to find holes in the collection that are based somewhat on personal taste.
Right.
And one area in which we were not strong is portraiture. Uh-huh. And it's something we've been acquiring in good measure in recent years. And so these are, you know, I think Ligon is challenging in that it's portraiture in a conceptual sense.
I think I had read about his like a while back, and like a few months back, and just thought that was a very interesting way to tackle the subject. I thought that was very, very cool.
Yeah, and we have a very strong historical collection of material related to the Civil War, and I thought there's his series can gain resonance by juxtaposition with those works in our collection and vice versa. So I'm happy to have it.
Yeah, and I think it's so cool. I've talked to several other artists, museums or galleries that have an existing collection, and they just kind of think of a new new way to look at it, new kind of grouping different of the existing collection together to make a new exhibition, just kind of a new theme. And I think it's kind of like reusing and recycling, and I just love that.
Yeah, I think thematic exhibitions are increasingly the hot new thing in museum culture, and I really I really love the opportunity. We have so many works on paper that can't be up all the time,
right.
So that rather than like a lot of museums will have a strict chronological way of showing their permanent collection, but and that's interesting too. But there's something to be said for relating it to people's experience now by giving them a thematic hook.
Right. Exactly.
So.
So did you think of this exhibition? Or was this your idea?
Me with it's co-curated by my colleague Shirley Reese Hughes, and I. She is actually the curator who has worked most closely with Cedric Huckabee,
mm-hmm.
and I was the one who advocated the Ligon, and so then our forces came together.
Cool.
It was a joint effort.
Cool.
Yeah.
So are Ligon and Huckabee, are they Texans? They live in your area?
No, so, and this is actually kind of, I don't know if this is a mirror of who Shirley and I are, but Ligon lives and works in New York,
mm-hmm.
and I am originally from New York.
Cool.
Came to the Eamon Carter from the Philadelphia Museum of Art.
Nice.
And Shirley is originally from Texas, and Cedric Huckabee lives and, or is from Fort Worth,
uh-huh.
and his subject matter is often related to the people in his neighborhood. But both of them, Ligon more so currently, but Huckabee rapidly, both of them have a national and international reputation. So actually, I think Cedric Huckabee won the National Portrait Gallery Prize either this year or recently. So he's a younger artist than Ligon. Ligon is somewhat more established, but I don't know if they know each other or are familiar with each other's work, but they are united in our gallery.
Yeah, that's cool. So I don't know, I just think this is so great. So do they so they both talk about identities and just different, like what are the different spins on identity, like what would Glenn's identities, how would that, his version of identities vary with Huckabee's?
Well, I think Huckabee is really interested in his family and his community and what makes a community tick. So the rationale for that series of portraits was he was really affected by the Occupy Wall Street movement and mm-hmm. the idea of the 1%. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, who are the 99%? And so he went from door to door in his neighborhood asking people if he could draw them, if he could speak to them. And so it's... I think it's a sort of community-building social act mm-hmm. that's part of his practice.
Yeah.
And Ligon started out as an abstract painter and began to use words and texts by other people in his art, mm-hmm. Famous authors, famous works of literature, with the notion of exploring how text can be used or obscured or lose its meaning. Yeah. And so I think he's more about the idea and the concept. I guess you would call him a conceptual artist, whereas I think Huckabee is about the relationship with the person who he is portraying.
Right.
And his own relationship within his community. And so I think that's, while we're using Ligon's work to talk about identity, you know, there's more to what he's doing than pigeonholing it into an issue of identity politics, which people often show Gwen Ligon in that context because he is an artist of color and he is also openly gay, and so he tends to be used by museum curators as a representative of sexuality or of race.
Right, and right.
I think we're trying to do more than that in this exhibition, to
right.
talk about the inability of portraiture to really capture who somebody is.
Right, right. I mean, I almost think it's like too easy to kind of pinpoint him as just a gay or a black person. Just
right.
show his art and show. I mean, this is fantastic art, and it's very, very just. I think it's more than political. I think it's. I think that's too easy. I think that's just.
I think it's part of it in that you read the description. Obviously, so he's had 10 friends describe him. When they gave him the descriptions, he felt that they were eerie reminders of runaway slave ads from the 19th century.
Yeah.
And part of that eeriness, I think, is racially charged, and that people are trying to either skirt the issue of describing him based on race or mm-hmm. are very overtly describing him based on the color of his skin. And so that is so much a part of the piece,
right.
But that's not really the entirety of the exhibition.
Right, that's not exactly what it's about.
Yeah,
I think that's very cool. So, so tell me about Huckabee. You were saying that he was on Wall Street and he was affected by the 99%. And
yeah, I don't know. He was just watching. I don't think he was personally on Wall Street, but he was interested. He was watching the news and interested in that Occupy Wall Street movement.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
He did these drawings, and then he had a residency with the Brandywine Workshop, which is a master printers in outside of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And so the series that we have are lithographs that he made after having done these drawings. And what's really interesting is that there's some members of his family, there's some people obviously who were more open to being sketched than others,
mm-hmm.
and so there are sketches. Maybe a lot of our docents and visitors asked us, well, why does this one look unfinished and this one is so highly detailed? And I think it had to do with the length of time that someone was comfortable sitting with him, and
right.
and about the rapport between the artist
exactly.
and the sitter, and that's something that's so important to portraiture.
Yeah.
But I equate it with John Singer Sargent because, I mean, I generally work in the 19th century, mm-hmm. where he would, you know, the idea is that whether or not he liked a person, if they were super interesting, his portraits are always better.
Right. Yeah, because he can sit longer with them. That makes sense.
Interesting, it could be a derogatory thing, or it could be... Yeah. And so I think there's something of that coming out of the series, but we've hung them all on, or Shirley has hung them all on one wall in a kind of community quilt.
Cool.
And they also, I mean, so like the Lygons, they also have whatever part of the conversation really resonated with Cedric. Mm-hmm. He included a bit of that text with each portrait.
Cool.
Or with many of the portraits. So they are, you know, in effect, they're labeled and captioned within the work of art, which is really interesting. So that's part of why we were intrigued by this possibility of talking about it, either in written form or in visual form. How do you talk about who somebody is?
Right. Yeah, I think that's because that's like you said, it's just such a huge identity, such a huge thing. You just can't encapsulate it in just one picture or one, you know, right. written piece. I think that's.
Well, and I think about it this way too, and I mean, we could have done this if we did the show over and over and over again. I mean, I'm doing a show in that same space later on called Horizon Lines,
mm-hmm.
and it's to me. To do with the fact that I moved from New York or Philadelphia to Texas, and all of a sudden I'm like, my relationship to this guy is different.
So
we're hanging everything on the same line where all the horizon lines match up, but it's all higgledy-piggledy, and I could have chosen basically anything in the collection.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just trying to get you to look at something in a new way,
right.
And I think the same can be said for this show. I mean, we have paintings, for instance, of... a still life painting by William Michael Harnett, and it's the objects from a gentleman's library. Well, that's no less effective a portrait than had the artist chosen to represent the person's face.
Right.
I could see this. I could see doing this again, and it would be all people's stuff.
Right. Exactly. Totally. I like that.
So, yeah.
I think that's great. That's really cool. So yeah, there's just so many different ways you can do it.
We just acquired, our photo curator acquired a work of art of someone who goes into people's homes after they've been abandoned,
mm-hmm.
and photographs the stuff that's left behind. And again, that would have been a great thing to include in this show.
That's a portrait. I said that's a portrait.
Exactly.
I think that's great. So now, when is that coming out after this, or is this after this exhibition, or?
Horizon Lines is gonna open in, I believe, in late October.
Cool. So that sounds like a great one. I want to do a podcast on that one too. So who is Eamon Carter? Who was Eamon Carter?
Is that the question?
Yeah.
So it was like a little echoey.
Sorry.
Basically, Eamon Carter was a newspaperman and a businessman in Fort Worth.
Mm-hmm.
He also had made money from the from oil,
mm-hmm.
which is not unusual in Texas.
Right.
Came from very, very modest means, but was hugely civically engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And he became friends with Will Rogers, the humorist and Uber cowboy,
uh-huh.
and decided that he wanted to build a collection of art and start a museum as a benefit to the citizens of Fort Worth,
mm-hmm.
in a way that he, you know, to expose people to things to which he had not been exposed as a kid.
Uh-huh.
And Rogers had a good love for the cowboy art of Frederick Remington and Charles Russell.
Mm-hmm.
And so he encouraged Eamon Carter to collect the great works by those two artists. And Carter amassed a collection of more than 300 works of art, from sculptures, watercolors,
wow.
And oil paintings by those two artists. And so that formed the core of our collection. Unfortunately, before the museum could be established or could be built, mm-hmm. Amy Carter passed away, and it fell to his daughter, Ruth Cooker Stevenson, mm-hmm. To carry his vision forward. And she, along with the first director of the museum, had this notion of expanding the story to encompass more than just, although it was fabulous, more than just the work of Remington and Russell, mm-hmm. but to talk about the American experience.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
And so that was, that was her vision. And she selected the architect, Phil Johnson, for our building. And she was really, for many, many years, the leading force in the guidance of this museum. So
cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Very cool.
Awesome. And so you said I'm sorry, go ahead.
And she was also a trustee at the National Gallery, so I think she had big aspirations for this place, that it would be a mini National Gallery.
Yeah. Yeah, and it sounds like it is. It sounds like you got quite a bit going on.
We have a wonderful collection of American art, and we've only really been around since 1961, and so we don't have a lot of extraneous works of art. You know, the idea was that we wouldn't acquire something just to have something by an iconic American artist, but we would only find the best.
Yeah.
And so if it meant that we didn't have a work of art by a particular icon in American art history, that was okay.
Yeah.
we'd rather wait for the gem. So we have a lot of, quite a few artists in depth, so that you can see different stages of their careers. You might have an artist who's lesser known, but had a masterpiece day,
uh-huh.
where they just went above and beyond themselves,
right.
and that was good too. And then the best, the best representatives of some of America's great artists, Thomas Cole, Frederick Church, Martin Johnson Heade, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
A real strength in landscape.
Cool. So landscape, but you said that you did not have a lot of portraiture until this.
We did not. I don't remember what the date is, but a couple of years ago we acquired a major. It was before I got here.
Mm-hmm.
A major portrait of Edwin Booth,
mm-hmm.
John Wilkes Booth's brother, by John Singer Sargent, and that sort of was an inspiration to enhance. That aspect of our collection. And so since I got here, we acquired a portrait by Henry Inman of Henry Inman was responsible for copying all the paintings that Charles Bird King did for the Smithsonian of American Indian leaders as they would come to D.C. in delegations in the 1820s, 30s. And those original paintings were destroyed by a fire in the Smithsonian in the 1860s, and Inman's copies then from the time of the original creation of those paintings then became the surviving record of the ambitions of Charles Bird King's project. So we acquired that, and then Huckabee and Ligon from a contemporary perspective, and we will continue to enhance that aspect of our collection for sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, and I was looking at some of the pictures that you have in this identity collection, and I don't remember if there is just Huckabee and Ligon, or are there other artists?
In the exhibition?
Yeah.
There are, it's individual identity is represented by Ligon, but then I thought it would be interesting to see other artists' self-portraits, because in a sense it's kind of a self-portrait.
Right.
In the collection, so we have a self-portrait of... and they're also celebrities, I guess. They're artist celebrities.
Right.
So a self-portrait of Thomas Hart Benton.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas
who? I'm sorry.
Thomas Hart Benton.
Oh, okay.
Who was at one point one of the probably the most famous artists of America. He was on the cover of Time magazine.
Wow.
were active from like the 1920s to actually the 1970s. Mm-hmm. And so he shows himself in a self-portrait as like his hair is all wavy and it's all dramatic. Oh. And then there's a color lithograph that served as the lid of a cigar box of Charlie Russell, so I mentioned to you that our collection started with Remington and Russell, mm-hmm. and they called Charlie Russell the cowboy artist. Mm-hmm. So this is a color print of him in the guise of the cowboy artist, which is kind mm-hmm. of interesting.
Cool. That is interesting.
And then photographs of Georgia O'Keeffe and mm-hmm. Diego Rivera. And then, and also actually a photograph of Robert Mapplethorpe.
Cool.
Some works, a lot of photographs in the exhibition. A photograph of John Coltrane by Roy de Caraza. Mm-hmm. And we can actually get you a checklist if Jessica hasn't done so already.
She sent me a link to you guys' portal so I can get some of the pictures. But yeah, I couldn't remember if there were other artists besides.
Yeah, and so then Philippe Halsman is the photographer most well known for photographing Marilyn Monroe and part of constructing her identity as Marilyn Monroe. So yeah. Three photographs of her by him. Uh-huh. A photograph of Clark Gable and Carol Lombard and Gloria Swanson.
Oh, wow.
James Cagney, and then as I mentioned, the 19th century photograph of Sarah Bernhardt and Lily Range.
So this is a huge exhibition.
It ends up being 128 objects,
wow.
But that is including 101 of those objects are the one work of art, one piece by Cedric Huckabee.
Uh-huh.
101 or 109?
Wow,
I can't remember.
Yeah,
surely
yeah.
It's not the expert. Let's see. It's number 11 through number 111. So 101.
Wow. That's quite a bit.
Yeah, and then 10 works by Glenn Ligon, so mm-hmm. that leaves just a few additional works.
Right.
There's this very interesting print by an artist named Nathan Oliveira, uh-huh. which is of Georgia O'Keeffe, and it's basically an abstract print with a silhouette of Georgia O'Keeffe's head.
Uh-huh.
And the only way you know that it's Georgia O'Keeffe is that her profile has become so recognizable that, like, even this abstract blob, you're like, oh, yeah, that's Georgia O'Keeffe. I thought that was interesting because, there's so much information in the Ligon. I don't know him at all.
Right.
And I probably wouldn't recognize him if I saw him.
Right.
And yet I can look at this white blob on a piece of paper and be like, oh yeah, that's definitely Georgia O'Keeffe.
Yeah, totally. That's awesome. So what other kind of exhibitions do you have coming up that you want to promote?
We have, in the fall, the major exhibition that will be in our special exhibition space, which is usually our main attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Currently in that space, we have Norman Lewis, which comes to us from the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts. And Norman Lewis was an under-recognized by the mainstream, but very much recognized by his community.
Right.
Abstract painter.
Cool.
And he was actually the subject of, there was a CBS Sunday Morning profile of him a couple of weeks ago. So we have that exhibition up. And then in the fall, we have in our special exhibition space a show called Border Contos, which is by the photographer Richard Mizrak and a musician, photographer, musician, artist, poet named Guillermo Galindo.
Mm-hmm.
Basically what they've done is they've gone all along or the U.S.-Mexico border, Mizrak taking photos, and Galindo gathering objects from which he's constructed musical instruments.
Cool.
So it'll be a multimedia exhibition of both photographs and these instruments constructed of discarded items that will have a sort of sound component, so you'll be able to hear what the instruments sound like when they're played.
Yeah.
So that's going to be really cool.
That does sound really cool. All that stuff sounds great. You guys have a lot of things going on.
That sounds
really awesome. Cool. Well, can we do another podcast about one of these other or several of these other exhibitions?
Yes, and I will tell you, there's about to be, we're not ready to say anything, but I'm about to be involved in a really cool project that's starting up in August.
Cool.
And so when we are ready to release that information, I will definitely have Jessica or Tracy contact you because it's going to be great.
Awesome. Oh, that's awesome.
I can't tell you what it is.
That's okay.
but we can definitely do another podcast on that topic.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Maggie, for talking to me. This has been great.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you so much to Maggie Adler of the Amon Carter Museum of American Art for telling us about the Identity exhibition. And thank you to you for listening. I know I learned a lot. And if you're in the Fort Worth area, check out the museum. If you're interested in having us promote your product or service, if you have a comment, if you have ideas for future podcasts, or would like to be on the show yourself, please contact me at arttalkwithbrooke@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Let's Talk Art with Brooke is a Hotspur Enterprises media production.